Greetings, magnificent souls, to the Attract Health, Build Wealth podcast, where we have open and honest discussions about ourselves. This is a place where we break down, break away, and break through our emotional trauma, allowing ourselves to attract health, build wealth, and live a peaceful life. We are tired of being sick and tired. We are tired, but we are not giving up. We know that there is something magnificent inside of us. And because we are fighting daily, hourly, and by the minute, fighting ourselves, our kids, our spouses, we have to do things differently. We have to break the cycle. We don't have a million chances. We have to be happy now. We have to find a way. So how do we do that? How is that possible? If you look around at what society is telling you, they tell you that what we're doing is impossible. Yet it's happening every single day. And it's happening through the practice and the love that we call awakening the magnificent soul. We are all magnificent souls, and these are our stories of healing. Today in episode 66, I welcome Jennifer Whiteside to the show to talk about her journey from abuse to purpose. But before we get into the podcast, don't forget to let me know your thoughts about this episode, any feedback you have, or anything you would like me to cover on future podcasts at epiphanyvault.com. Remember, it is a safe place, and I would welcome the discussion. Today's episode is brought to you by the Align Into Authenticity coaching program, which is open for enrollment until the end of the day today. If you're open to not being hurt in relationships, you're open to being more in the moment and present, and understanding more about your body emotionally, like why your autoimmune reactions may be popping up, you can check out more information, including testimonials, at attracthealthbuildwealth.com/coaching. You can also apply there, and you can schedule a complimentary chat to see if this program is right for you. So my guest today is Jennifer Whiteside. She's someone I've come to admire and love throughout the years. She is currently a client of mine, so full disclosure on that. But she has agreed to come on the show to speak about her past abusive marriage that seemed impossible to escape. You will hear a lot more about her story during this podcast, but she thought that she had healed after she left, but then she got stuck with anxiety and anger that she just couldn't shake. And she's opened up to a great new layer of healing, has now stepped further into her purpose and her calling. And here's my interview with Jennifer Whiteside. All right, Jen, welcome so much to the podcast. I'm so honored to have you on today. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. So what I really wanted to do today is I wanted to introduce you to my podcast audience. In full disclosure, we have been working together for almost a year now, and you have stepped into some really amazing things. And I really wanted to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself and really start speaking your truth to the world. So take up as much time as you like, but I'd love to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself to my audience, a little bit about your journey, if you're open to sharing that as well.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. My name is Jen Whiteside, 30 years old, currently residing in lovely, lovely heat, Phoenix.
Yeah.
melting outside. So I can't believe it's been almost a year. That's crazy. I come from a lot of my traumas around my ex-husband. He was emotionally and mentally abusive towards me, which I didn't even know he was until I got therapy after I left him. But I went to therapy and thought I got better and, you know, I was done. That was it. I don't have to do this anymore. I don't have to work on my healing or anything. And then I was just triggered over and over again and angry all the time and wasn't sure why, because I'd done the work and this wasn't fair. And that's when I decided to get with Lily. And, you know, it was a hard acceptance, I think, at the beginning, when it was, you know, I was having all those memory issues and all this stuff. And they were like, well, it's because of your mood and you're depressed and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you don't know me right now. It's not, hell, but it was, you know. Oh, yeah, I just, you know, I've put in a lot of hard work, but with a lot of support from you, and I've come super, you know, I'm not angry at all anymore, and actually, instead of, you know, just trying to survive day to day, and love my life and the people in it, and yeah, I'm just doing so much better than what I was, what, 9 months ago when we first started this. So
yeah,
I don't even know that person anymore.
Yeah. So. It's been such an honor working with you. And I'm just going to apologize to the audience. You probably know my dog, Ellie, and Eugene very well. She's having a field day right now in my new house. We haven't quite, we have not quite hit the flow of where we need to when she knows that I'm recording. So this is real life, my friends. So I apologize if she's too loud. Thank you so much for sharing that. And like I said, it's really been an honor working with you. It's really just been an amazing journey for me. And I think that one of the most impactful things that I kind of find with helping people do this is that it's as much healing for me as it is for you, because I do think that I have trust now in relationships. And, you know, I know this is a client, you know, a client coach relationship, but it's still very much intimate and very much vulnerable and very much trust. Like there's a lot of trust in there. So I feel like there's a lot of healing that happens in that container. If we can go back a little bit, I would love to just know a little bit more about what you mentioned about the abuse that you were suffering. You know, if you feel comfortable, what was the situation that you were in and what kept you there? I'm wondering.
So I was, gosh, just fresh 21, I think, when we got together. And, you know, I didn't have promising boyfriends before that, but, you know, he came in and he was just so charming and such a gentleman, so nice, you know, always, you know, put me first there at the beginning. My family loved and adored him. He came from, you know, a good family too. And everyone got along and it was great. And I was like, and I remember thinking to myself, I was like, you know, had been like what, a month in, and I was like, yeah, this is it. Like, he's going to be the man I'm going to marry. And, I remember, so it was my senior year of college, in which I was a fifth year senior. And I did a lot of extracurricular activities because I didn't get to do that at the beginning of my college career. So I had told him, I was like, I'm going to be super busy. Like I'm volunteering for everything. And, you know, so we're not going to have a lot of time to spend together, but I just need you to know. He knew where I was coming from because he knew about my past and stuff. And, but I mean, I was in a sorority. I held chairs and I had an internship and I volunteered anywhere and everywhere. And, you know, I was a full-time student, full-time worker. And I think that's when it really started, was that, you know, he would get upset with me because I wasn't prioritizing our time together. And that I was choosing other people over him, in which, you know, I'd be like, you know, listen, I told you why I'm doing this. Like, I still love you and I care about you, but I need to focus on getting my grades up. Because, you know, everyone knows, like, if you fail a class in college, it takes everything to bring your GPA up. So, but he would be like, oh, okay, and understand. And then it would be fine for like a month or two. And then we'd fall right back into the same thing. You know, the exact same argument. Why aren't you prioritizing me, all this stuff? So, and it was pretty much that. And it turned, it was very subtle. And I didn't look at that as being, I was like, you know what? going through something, maybe, you know, he's upset, like, this isn't anything to break up over. So I stayed, and then it just kind of turned into more of, and at the time, you know, back then you didn't know these terms like gaslighting or love bombing, like those things didn't really exist back then.
Yeah, we didn't have Instagram and Facebook either to blast it out or misunderstand it, maybe these days too.
Brand new and barely anyone could work it. I just remember instances where he would get mad at me, say I was, you know, ungrateful for the things that he did for me. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, all I do is, like, you know, tell you I appreciate you. And anytime we had off work, like we were together, like I skipped out on mandatory practices or events for my sorority to hang out with him. And that was just never enough. And there was an instance, I remember skipping an event, and he literally, I sat on his couch and did homework, and he laid on his bed, and I could see him, and he just laid on his bed pouting, literally like a child the whole time. And I remember at that time thinking, you know what, like, I'm just gonna break up with him, like, this is ridiculous. And then he would, you know, just like, oh no, I love you so much, like, I'm sorry, like, it'll never happen again. And then it wouldn't happen for a while. And so, you know, I was like, all right, well, I'll give him another chance, chance after chance after chance. And, right, you know, he would, like, I was never, yeah, thankful enough. I was always, there's probably lots of things that are coming up, but it would take like hours to tell these stories. And I can laugh about it now because, like, I'm better. And, you know, that's just my sense of humor now. So
that's it.
You got to have that dark sense of humor to get past this stuff. Like, I'd be in a dark cave the whole time. Like, why?
Yeah.
I stayed because I felt that I had no choice, really. Near the end, I knew he was going to propose. And again, something had happened and we were fighting, and I can't even tell you what it was about. I had talked to my best friend and I said, you know what, I'm going to break up with him because I can't handle it anymore. And she told me she was coming into town because he was planning on proposing. So I was sitting in my driveway that night. I walked inside. I was like, and I remember pulling my mom aside and sitting in her room and talking to her and saying, like, is this what it is? Is this what marriage is? Is like fighting all the time, like feeling, I just felt useless. And, you know, sometimes barely even a person. And I can describe it now. Back then, like, I didn't know that's how I was feeling. I just felt like shit all the time.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how to put words to it. And I don't remember the exact conversation, but I just remember my mom, she knew he was going to propose, and she had told me, she was like, you know, sometimes that's, you know, you fight in marriages and that's what happens sometimes. And you have to, I think her words to me were, can you imagine in the future not waking up next to him? And my exact words, I don't know. It's like, that should have been like a sign for me. But again, like, I just felt a lot of pressure from my family. Like, they loved him. And, you know, this is, you know, societal pressure too. Like, this is just how you're supposed to live your life. You know, you go to college, you get, find someone, you get married, you start a family, you do all this stuff. And it was like, at this point in time, I think I was 24, and, you know, I mean, I was still a baby, like, I didn't know, but, so I was like, all right, well, and we worked things out, and, you know, me apologizing for everything and him not apologizing for anything. And, and then, you know, everything seemed good and whatnot. And, you know, we weren't fighting as much after we got married. I think the real problem came or showed itself is when we moved out here to Phoenix. Mm-hmm. So I was pulled away from everything I'd ever known. My mom, my dad, like my family. I had my grandparents out here, but I mean, I had nothing. I had no friends. And I literally just had to like rely on him. So that I think helped open my eyes, because I think it took like 6 months of us being here. And I was like, yeah, no, this is trash. I'm done. Like I literally, but that's also when it got its darkest, because I was so depressed. I was numb. You know, he would, I remember one time he had bought me a pair of like Nike shoes and brought them home, and I was looking at them and I was like, thank you. But he didn't hear me. And he starts screaming at me about how I'm ungrateful and like ripped the shoes out of my hand. And I just like sat there on the couch and I was like, what the hell? Like what?
Yeah. Wow.
My brain was just so like fuzzy from like the depression, from everything. I was just like, I was just numb to it. I was like, well, okay. All right. Well, just have to tiptoe around him.
Yeah. And what's hard about that too, is that kind of treatment, if it happens again and again, it's like, it becomes normal. Like mm-hmm. it becomes like this normalcy. And then you don't know, it's like confusing, especially if you're isolated. Yeah. It's confusing on whether you think like, do I deserve this? Did I really do something wrong? Like it's just so insidious.
Yeah. I thought I was super deserving of it, that, that yeah, this was all it's going to be. I mean, it got to the point where it's like, I volunteered to work 7 days a week and stay there as long as I could, so I wouldn't have to be home. And then, you know, I stopped talking to my parents, you know, and I was, you know, suicidal. Never acted on it, but well, I thought about it, because I thought that was like, it would be easier to do that than to actually leave him, because I thought he was never going to let me leave. And then it was Christmas Eve and I got home from work and I was making cookies for the next day for people at work. And he was yelling at me again about how we never spent time together. And I was the sole earner in the house. While he was going to school, he did not have a job. So all the money came from me working, which in a, like a little bit of like financial abuse kind of came in, not traditional sense of like him having the money and controlling it, but like I was bringing in the money, but he was still controlling of like what I could like spend my money on, what I could do with it. If I ever made cash, I had this drawer in the closet, I would put it in and it would always be gone the next day. So if I wanted to keep my cash, I had to hide it. And you know, a piece of advice my dad had given me was combining our checking accounts and stuff. And I'm so glad I never did that. But yeah, it was just, you know, I remember my car breaking down and just for fun, like it's fun to look at cars and, you know, a possibility of buying a new one. And he was furious with me and he was like, that is a decision we make together. Like, my grandpa was talking about how he wanted to buy me a car if it came down to it. And he was like, no, absolutely not. Like that's something we do together as a couple. So yeah, Christmas Eve comes around and I finally just tell him, I was like, I have energy to make these cookies, but I don't have energy to sit here and talk to you anymore, to coddle you, to sit here and take this anymore. Like I'm done. And we fought, and I had to work at 11 the next day, like a 12-hour shift. And he kept me up until probably like 3 or 4 in the morning. Anytime I tried to go to sleep, he would wake me up. Yeah. And he
sounds familiar.
yeah, started drinking and was like, well, I'm going to go drive around, like drive drunk. And if you got an accident, it's my fault. And so of course it's like, I didn't love him anymore, but I cared about him. And of course others, like, it's like, I don't want you to get hurt. I just don't want to be with you anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like, I want to be on my own and do my own thing. And he was like, that's a bullshit excuse. Like, that's not real. Why are you really leaving me? And I still stayed until I think April, because he would just like chip away at me and say, like, you won't even try to work at our marriage. So you're a terrible, horrible person. He was a liar too, which I had found out later. Glad I didn't know about this while we were still married. But after I told him I was leaving, he had FaceTimed my brother on Christmas Day, told him what happened. So my parents drove out here after the new year, but he had told my parents that, because I stayed late at work most nights, as late as possible, and then I'd get home and sit in my car in the driveway until I was like, all right, you should be asleep by now.
Yeah.
But he had told my parents that I was out every single night. I hardly ever came home, and I was doing drugs.
Mm.
So yeah. I remember my mom saying to me, she was like, this is after I'd left him. And she told me all this. And I was like, Mom, I've never done drugs in my life. And she had said to me, you know, I really thought when we came out there that I was going to have to put you in a place like Lakeside.
Mm.
I'm like, I've literally never touched a drug in my life. Like, no.
That's hard. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Just to be clear for the audience, are you with him anymore?
No.
Okay. Let's make that very explicit. So you got out, which is amazing and strong. It takes courage. What was the breaking point for you?
In April of 2017. So we hadn't even been in Arizona for like a year. And my mom had broken her arm. So I wanted to go home and like surprise her, and kind of help take care of her for like a week. And I had asked my manager, I was like, hey, you know, it's short notice, but can you give me a few days off next week? He goes, yeah, done. I'm like, cool. So I went home that night and told him, I was like, hey, like, this is my plan. I want to go see my mom. You know, obviously she's hurt. He knew that. I asked my manager to make sure before I bought plane tickets to make sure it's okay, I can have off. And he never hit me. And this is the only time I ever thought he was going to hit me.
Oh man.
And it was that terrifying. Point too.
Mm-hmm.
Terrifying. And he, I mean, like, almost like bloody murder, like screaming at me. He was red in the face. He was like, of course, everyone knows you're going back to Memphis before I do. I was like, I only told my manager because I'm not going to buy a ticket if I'm not going to get off work. He was like, no, like, you're a fucking liar, screaming at me. I'm surprised like cops weren't called. And I could transfer money from my savings to my checking account to buy the ticket and it would happen instantly. And he was like, that's not how banks work. Like, literally mansplaining me, like, how my checking account works. And just screaming. And I'm sitting there crying and he's up, like, waving his hands, like, in my face, yelling at me about how I don't know anything, how I'm a liar. I'm, you know, all of these things, you know, check off the list. And then the ticket was expensive, but he bought it. He was like, no, I'm buying this ticket. You are not buying. I'm like, cause he just needed that control.
Mm.
And, you know, I honestly, I feel like he could sense it like slipping. And so I go home and I remember sitting on the couch And my parents are sitting on the other one, and they're just sitting there like joking, like playing around. That's how they've always been. And that was my breaking point, to realize that I was never going to have that kind of relationship with him, which, and it was like, again, like I didn't even know what was happening to me was abuse until a couple years later, or a year or two later, something like that. But yeah, the breaking point was that I'm never going to have this fun joking around, teasing each other, calling each other name, like a fun marriage. I'm never going to have what my parents have with him. So yeah, I got home. And then I think 2 days later, I was like, no, this is it. Like, I'm done. And he was pretty calm, and I packed as much stuff as I could. And I went to my grandparents. I filled up my little tiny Chevy Cavaliers to the top, and I left.
Yeah, been there too. I'm wondering how much this resonates to the audience, the story, and feel free to DM me on Instagram, or even Jen, you'll get her information at the end of the episode. So, wow, it's a lot. Thank you for sharing that with everyone. It takes a lot of courage, you know, especially when you, again, like the isolation piece and the exile piece is so, oh man, I know that feeling of like helplessness and hopelessness, and yeah, you kind of don't know what to do because you have all these other emotional obligations, it seems like, right? Yeah. So it's like, well, where do I stand, and how do I make this best decision for myself? And so, yeah, it's a difficult place. So tell me where, I know that you went to therapy in between working together. Let's kind of start from that point where you broke away from him, which is an amazing healing act in and of itself. Like, it's Jen 2.0, right? So what's the growth that you've been doing? What did you find out about yourself about why that you continued in that situation? I just love to hear, if you want to share kind of, and I'm sure the audience does as well, about kind of what's the growth been since you're able to kind of escape that toxic environment?
Well, from that point to now, it's been extravagant.
Nice.
Yeah. That's like really the only word for that. I remember when I first left, and it was like, I felt just free. Though the whole process of getting divorced was just as traumatizing. Like, he made it sure that it was. But, you know, I had started living on my own, and I was like living life, and like, yeah, I can do whatever I want and all this stuff, and not actually processing what had happened to me. And then, you know, I was just starting to fall back into those patterns of feeling worthless, and I was angry all the time. And I remember thinking, like, why I'm not with him anymore. Like, why do I feel like this? I'm free. I'm done. Divorce is finalized. I never have to speak to again, but I still feel like I did when I was with him. It wasn't as extreme, but it was there. So it finally got to the point where I was like, all right, let me find a therapist, because I didn't even know what coaching was. But I found a therapist, and she's an amazing woman. I love her so much. But she had to beat it into my head about, she's like, Jen, I swear to God, if you say he's just not a nice person one more time, he's a say it with me, he abused you. I was like, like, what? No, he didn't hit me. So, you know, I did therapy for maybe about 8-9 months, and she released me, and I was good to go. And I was like, yeah, I feel great. Like, this is awesome. But every now and then, like, those triggering things would come up, and it was like, you know, my anxiety got horrible. Mm. And I still wasn't, you know, I was like, is this just how it's going to be forever? And then, you know, I'd occasionally go back and see her and be like, this is what's happening. And, you know, I just didn't understand again, like, why is this happening? And then last year I was in that car accident, and then I felt like I was back at square one again. Mm. You know, I was living those limiting patterns. I was angry all the time. You know, I was lashing out. Every little thing was triggering to me. Work became almost, I think I cried every day. I was like, what is happening? So I started seeing my therapist again, and she gave me a book, and I was like, oh, this makes sense. Okay, it can bring up, you know, because stuff lives in your body. And I was like,
yeah,
you know, I hadn't really properly healed. And, you know, that's, you know, when you started doing your stuff, and I was like, this stuff makes sense. I was like, I feel that way. I feel that way too. It's like, maybe I should look into this. And you know what? And the rest is history. And yeah, so, and doing, yeah, so much better. But I was angry all the time. Yeah. So
all of that, yeah, all the trauma you experienced, like you said, it was still triggering. It was blocking being held in your body, and the car accident, which I remember that you, when you came to me, I remember you having a lot of physical symptoms, like your back was hurting a lot. Your IBS was flaring up. You know, like, anxiety was a state that you were comfortable with, but it's uncomfortable, comfortable as in normal, but uncomfortable as in like, shit, this doesn't feel right all the time. Right.
Yeah. So
that's awesome. So what do you know about yourself now?
You know, I know I've been through a lot, but it's not my identity.
I love that so much.
Obviously, it's, you know, unfortunately, it's, you know, something I can relate to with a lot of other people on this planet, sadly. But I'm not living in that, like, victim state anymore. I've realized as I've, you know, been healing that I have a lot to offer.
Yes.
Just, you know, my time, my, you know, with, like, work, and I mean, with everything, it's like, I'm, you know, not just this, like, person who suffered a trauma, like, I'm a human being, that, you know, in my words, I just feel like, you know, for the first time in my life, that it's like, yeah, to give, like, I want to, like, give back.
Nice.
And I knew that, like, when I was, it's like, I've always wanted to, like, help people and stuff, but now it's like, I can feel that. It's like, I want to, like, help people. And
it's such a beautiful thing. That's sorry to interrupt you. It's just, I just want to sit with that for a minute, because it's such a beautiful thing. I think I posted about this yesterday, I think, on Instagram, is that when our suffering can transmute and transform into our passion, and it doesn't have to be coaching, it doesn't have to be being a therapist, it doesn't have to be, you know, what you're seeing, you know, if you're listening out there, what you're seeing or you're listening to right now. But I think that there's such a deep, like, our suffering can be very deep sometimes, right? Like, very deep. But that's also the depth of our gift, and the depth of our healing. And it's such a beautiful place to come to, because it's really, I mean, it's a change. It's like, it really is a change in purpose. Like for years, I'm sure you can identify with this. It's like for years, my purpose was just to survive. Like that was why I was living, is just to try to get through. And that transmutation, that alchemy that you're talking about is just, it's so, so good.
Yeah.
So good.
So, and it finally just feels like I actually have like a lot of love to give, like to myself and to others, when I don't know when I've ever felt like that.
Yeah. Well, you queued up my next kind of question that came to me, which is, how are your relationships these days?
They are actually really great. Mm-hmm. I've always had a really close relationship with my parents. So that's, you know, that obviously really healed after I left my ex-husband. But I feel like we're, you know, we talk all the time, and, you know, I tell my mom everything. And so we're doing really great. Friendship wise, like I have, you know, a close, you know, few, you know, handful of people that, you know, I love and support, and love and support me, and know about my story and what I've been through. And, you know, I have lost friends along the way in this healing journey, which happens, and it's sad. And but
I'm raising my hand for those podcast audience members that can't see me.
You know, I'm looking back at it that I don't have any ill will towards those people. I love them. They were in my life for a reason, and I hope they're, you know, thriving as well and doing great. But there's just, there, you know, there's a reason they're not in your life anymore. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, like romantically, I'm doing, we're doing real, real good. So just lots of understanding and communication, and just happy, and just, you know, we talked about this yesterday, just a lot of, it's, you know, I do have self-love for myself. Like, obviously, like it's there, but, you know, I was driving home listening to a song, and I was like, and it hit me. It's like, oh my gosh. I was like, is this what it feels like? Well, one, when I'm listening to myself and listening to my wants and needs, like truly, and it's like, oh, like
so good.
I love to be heard. Like, that's my big thing. Like, I need you to hear me when I'm talking to you and understand like why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. And that's been going on between me and my partner. And it's like, damn, this is what love feels like. I was like, true, just like sitting in that moment, that overwhelming, just like love for myself, and the fact that I can let others love me too.
The universe is tickling right me right now. That's what I call chills. So thank you for that. I'm so glad. Well, I want to close up because I want to respect each other's time here, but it's been such an honor, and it's so powerful for women like us to speak our truths, I think. And I'm honored to have that platform to help you do that too. I would love you, like, as we close out, to give you the opportunity for any podcast listeners in my audience that want to connect with you, or, you know, update us on kind of what you're working on right now, what you're transitioning into. So I really want to give you that platform.
So I'm currently in the process of starting my own coaching program. I haven't started taking any clients yet. I'm still trying to set everything up. But you can follow me on my Instagram page. It's JENNM as in Maria, and then Whiteside. I post every day. But yeah, I'm just trying to find people out there who relate and who, you know, want to help, and I want to help people heal a lot faster than when I did.
Yes.
So, but yeah, currently in the process of doing that. So it's exciting.
Awesome. What I love about too, and by the way, I will put all that link to your Instagram feed on the show notes. So if anybody is interested in following Jen, that will be available to you. In closing, what I love about this process is in working with you and the growth that I've seen you do, and hopefully that you can recognize for yourself as well, is that you actually came into working with me thinking that you wanted to do something else with your time. And knowing that you had a current job that was really kind of a means to an end, but that you wanted to move into serving, but it was in a different output. Like it was around animals and animal welfare and things like that, which is awesome and great. Like there's nothing about that. But what I love about what I've seen from an outside perspective with this process is that this next phase of you going into your coaching program really came organically to you. It came from what I see, it came because that you were opening up to healing, to yourself, what your true needs and desires are. And if, correct me if I'm wrong, but did this not hit you on a summer day in the park when you were reading a book?
Yeah. I was reading the Claim Your Power from Mastin Kipp, and it was a quote about using our wounds to, it's like we were, you know, can't change the past, and you know what happened, but it's like you can take those wounds and use them to help others, to put good out into the world.
And it hit you,
and it hit
like
me.
A lightning bolt.
Yeah.
So like, it's amazing. It's amazing. And I do really think that that's what happens when you start to heal and we start to clear those blocks. And you've been an amazing client to work with, and I can't wait to see where this grows to. Can't wait to see what the next step is and next phase is. And I really appreciate you coming on, being vulnerable, speaking up here on the podcast.
Thank you.
My pleasure.